accomplished some things as we're spending our time this week talking about King David. We mentioned at the outset of this series that I'll let you know, oh yeah, my leash is back. I always worry with these things. I've told folks I've straightened out more forms than I care to count with the volume that comes.
I don't necessarily need that, but it does help out some for recording purposes, I think. But listen, well, anyway, the Apostle Paul and others have talked about the greatness of Old Testament Bible characters. And in the New Testament, we find Paul talking to the Jews at Antioch of Pisidia, telling them that David was a man after God's own heart. And that gives merit to the study that we've been engaging in throughout the course of this week, as we're trying to kind of drill down into the life of David and see something about the heart of this great man. We talked about his caring heart, how that out of compassion that he was moved with care and concern for other people. He took care of Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, later on in life after his father Jonathan and what would have been his grandfather, King Saul, had both perished at the hands of the Philistines. He had such an abiding friendship with Jonathan. We noticed even from his earliest years that he had a care for his father's sheep, that he was not somebody who just was the hireling that filled a position, but rather he was the one who took a responsibility for doing what needed to be done. And we saw lessons that we could draw from that kind of parallel. Then last night we talked about the tender heart of David, which is approaching, you know, in some ways you talk about a caring heart and a tender heart, those almost sound like synonymous terms. But we tried to define the idea of being tender-hearted as the ability to be soft-hearted and sensitive enough to allow yourself to be touched by others and their conditions and their situations. Being tender-hearted will often then motivate you to be compassionate. That is true. But at the same time, there are many, many people that we find today that are not very tender-hearted. You know, we see all these examples of road rage. We see all the examples of individuals who wear their feelings on their sleeve. And at the least provocation, they're ready to fly into a rage and literally hurt somebody. And there are many individuals who just really are not very sensitive to the needs of other people. And as other people try to reason with them and try to reach them and try to touch their heart, they close the door. They don't want to let people in. They don't want to allow other individuals to affect their lives, their attitudes, and their outlook on things because they feel like they're right, they've got it all together, they have their opinions about certain things, and they become unreasonable and cannot allow themselves to be touched with the needs and other important factors that need to filter into their lives and evoke an appropriate response out of them. This is especially true in the preaching of the gospel. We began to share the story of the cross and talk to individuals about the love that God has had for man in sending his son. And under normal circumstances, whenever we find out that someone has been willing to lay down their lives for our benefit, that should evoke a tender-hearted response because we should be sensitive to that and we are affected by that. Oftentimes we may go to various memorials around over the country. If you go to the Arizona Memorial, I'm told, in Hawaii, or if you go to some of the famous battlefields that have taken place even in our own country during the Civil War, or we look at some of the memorials that have been constructed reminding us of those who have died in the military service defending the country, you're touched by that. I know when I was in Washington, D.C., there was a boy that I grew up with, a few years older than I was, that was drafted into military service and perished in the Vietnam War. And when you go to the wall, to the memorial, to that Vietnam struggle, it touches your heart when you see his name engraven there. It brings back memories of a smiling guy who was there at church with us, an individual who never met a stranger, a soft-spoken kind of guy that you couldn't help but love. But just seeing his name on the wall has an emotional effect because we knew him and knew that he laid down his life for a cause. Now, as we begin to preach the gospel of Christ and we see that the gospel is the power of God unto salvation, and we see why Christ had to die, and it's through the shedding of his blood that we can have remission of sins, when we're tender-hearted enough, that makes us want to do something in response. But when we do not have that tender heart, then we turn it off. Well, tonight we look at another aspect of David's heart. And this is the one that we may think we understand a whole lot about, because already in our series we've talked about how that David was a man of war, and that he asked God, should I go defend the people of Keilah? And should I, you know, go ahead and avenge the burning of the city of Ziklag? And then David was one who was highly praised for his military exploits. And so we think of his bravery. And we're going to pursue that tonight, understanding a little bit more about what a brave heart is really all about. Before we launch into the study in detail this evening, let's pause for a word of prayer. Bob, would you mind an opening word of prayer, please?
Father in heaven, we're so grateful for the time we have tonight to be able to come and study your holy and divine word. We're grateful for Brother Dale and his abilities to open up your word to us and to just give us those thoughts and ideas as it's conveyed through the Bible. We honor you and we give you praise. You are the great I am. Everything that we see, we know, comes from your hand. All those good things originate from your hand. We pray we'll be good students tonight, that we will listen in view of eternity. And this prayer we humbly offer in Jesus' holy name. Amen.
Amen. Being brave is not just doing something dangerous. You know, sometimes people do some things that just kind of make us shudder. You know, I've seen, you know, clips of individuals who think it's really cool to walk right along the edge of a terrible precipice, and you could drop down over the hill, falling hundreds and hundreds of feet to your death. But they think it's cool to just see if they can keep. To me, that's stupid, not really brave. You know, but nonetheless, sometimes individuals will do daring things, and we might respond to that as those being actions of bravery. And that's not always the case, because discretion is the better part of valor. You know, sometimes it takes more bravery to back away and say, I'm going to live to fight another day. This is not the right situation, and a better plan needs to be put in place here. And the bravest action is to retreat and regroup. But oftentimes we get the definitions messed up a little bit. Bravery is having the inner strength to press on through the fear and the reluctance that we normally have to go ahead and do that which is right. That's what bravery really is. You see what needs to be done. You see the critical nature of doing the right thing. But the first voice that flips up in your head is saying, let somebody else do it. I'm too afraid. I could never do that. I could never be successful. I could never make that work. And then the brave person is the one who says, but there's nobody else to do it but me. And even though there is a risk here, I might fail. Even though there is the risk of personal injury, even though there is the chance that this may not go right or go well for me at all, it is still what I feel like I have to do because it's the right thing. We think about the many stories of the first responders that we appreciate so much. We're very blessed at Eubank, where I normally preach. We have, I think at last count, about 17 people that are either currently EMS, you know, people, or they're nurses, or they are former, you know, emergency squad people. You know, if we have a medical emergency, we have a complete medical station up in the front of the building, everything from the defibrillator to the oxygen to everything else that goes with it. And we've got all kinds of medical people that can jump in there and help out should some kind of an emergency arise. But we've understood everything ever since, I think it was highly publicized at 9/11 and from days since that, that there, we are serviced in our communities by many individuals who are willing to run risks. They are willing to put their lives on the line every single day to try to take care of us in one way or another. Maybe it's a firefighter who is willing to run into a burning building to try and save the occupants that are trapped inside. Up in our part of the country, we have had numerous instances of individuals who have chosen to take pot shots at law enforcement personnel and even first responders. We've lost a lot of good men and women over the last few years. They were brave enough to do what needed to be done for the betterment of other people. And that bravery even cost them their lives. But it's also given for them the undying gratitude and lasting memorial in the minds of many people of folks who had that kind of strong, bold, courageous personality that moved them from a stop to getting involved in doing what needed to be done. Oftentimes, that's one of the challenges. Maybe a fellow sees the need for active service in the military or some other sort of risky profession, and there is a burn inside of him that that's what I really have been called to do. It's what I need to do. I have the ability to do it. And even though there are risks involved, I am willing to do it, and I'm ready to go. And then there are a lot of other, oh, no, 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 you can't do that. No, 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 that's a dangerous thing. No, 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 no. And they oftentimes, the folks that are left behind, well, why did he go? And the word bravery comes to mind. Of individuals who realized what was the need that was out there, and they pressed themselves to go ahead and do what needed to be done. We noticed earlier, whenever David was making his explanation to King Saul over in 1 Samuel chapter 17, that one of the skills that David learned as he was out there taking care of sheep was the fact that not every day was going to be peace and safety. You know, there are many of those days would have been fine. There would not have been a challenge. There wasn't a lion that came around every day or a bear or whatever. But when they were there, David didn't hightail it and run. In talking to King Saul here in 1 Samuel 17, in verse 34, David said unto Saul, "Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he rose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him." It wasn't all the benefit of standing 100 yards away and dropping him with the sure aim of a gun. He didn't have that option. He had to chase the animal down, possibly beat the animal to make it turn loose of the lamb that it had taken. And now the infuriated animal turns on him in close quarters. And David's got to deal with business. And he's got to dispatch this aggressive animal. And there was nobody out there to help. There was nobody else to call for and say, "Hey, come help me with this." It rested squarely on David's shoulders. And so David developed this brave heart early in his youth and developed skills that helped him throughout his life. You know, we'll be talking a little bit about the battle with Goliath this evening. Picking up that sling and going out to face Goliath, that wasn't the first time the boy had a sling in his hand. There were skills that he learned along the way that he needed in being able to protect the flock and to be able to take care of himself. And he pursued those skills and had them at a point where he had confidence that with the help of God, he could prevail. He wasn't being foolhardy. He wasn't making foolish choices. He was not going into situations that obviously were doomed to fail. But regardless of what, he had the courage to press on through with the knowledge that God would help him to be victorious. The thing that helps me and opens this story up for me in talking about David and his protection of those sheep was that David began to learn the skill of bravery at a very early age. Oftentimes today, we're not too keen on seeing that develop. We're more involved. The tenor of our society today is not so much the idea of seeing men rise up to be men with the courage and the bravery to do what needs to be done. But more and more, we want men to be quiet and compliant. Just do what you're told to do and don't make any waves. You know, sometimes, you know, you have to understand men are just wired a little bit different. I know when I was teaching school, I was a principal at one point. And if you've ever watched a bunch of kids going down an elementary hallway, every doorway they go through, the boys are going to jump to see if they can hit the top of the doorway when they're in elementary school. It's just wired in them. I don't know why, but there's something about the thrill of finally getting up there and I hit it, and then they're going to hit it every day when they go by. Well, I had one teacher that just drove her crazy. She knew that they were going to fall, twist an ankle, and break their neck. And so one day she came dragging these two boys into me and plopped them down in my office. And she said, I've been after these boys all year, and every time they go through that door, they think they have to jump and hit it. And I've got to deal with that. So she finally left and shut the door. And I said, guys, I know it's really hard to resist slapping that door frame. I used to do it too. But the bottom line is, the teacher said, don't do it. Now I know you want to, and if you're outside and you want to jump up and hit the bottom of the backboard or whatever else, I'm not going to say a word. But this is your final warning. She's your boss. She said, don't do it, so don't do it. But I understand why you want to do it, but just stifle it, okay? And we never had any problem. They got out, they learned from the lesson. But, you know, there's just things that we have to learn to balance and what's the right thing to do and how can we do it. And that's a teaching process. And oftentimes, you know, in our society, the role for men's really gotten blurred. Because it's not, if you wind up having a man who moves toward the macho end of the scale, oftentimes he is criticized for being chauvinistic and being crude and being, you know, all kinds of things that are unfair accusations quite often. But involved in this development early for David and this idea of bravery is simply the fact that we've got to learn to cope with fear. And that happens with all kids, regardless of gender. We are going to face situations in our lives that scare us. Now, are we always going to cower back? Or do we develop the courage to say, I can do this? And we step forward and give it a try. For example, when a little one starts walking, you know, when our little one started walking, it was a permanent bruise right here in the forehead because their feet would stop, but their top wouldn't. And, you know, bang, you know, but oftentimes there was this rough and tumble of learning. But what'd you do? Oh, don't try to walk. No. You get them up, you dust them off, say it'll be okay, and let them go again. And they learn to overcome their fear. My mother was scared silly of water. And as a kid growing up, you know, she said we couldn't get around the water because we might drown. And when you learn how to swim, then you can be around the water. I'm saying, Mom, there's something wrong with that. You know, how am I going to, if I'm not around the water? You know, but anyway, you know, later on, you know, I worked to get that worked out. But nonetheless, the first time in the pool was a rather scary experience because I didn't know what I was doing. I wanted to learn, and I did learn, fortunately, without drowning. Came close a few times, but we managed. But nonetheless, you, in order to learn the skill, you had to conquer the fear to accomplish that. Bravery is something that we learn and develop from early on in life as we develop a backbone. That there are things in life that appear to be scary and daunting, but I can do this. Getting up the first time to preach a sermon will absolutely terrify a guy, you know, to the core, trying to be able to do that. But guess what? That first sermon that was supposed to be 15 minutes and lasted for 3, you know, we survived it. We managed. And guess what? The next time we got up there, we did a little bit better job. And then eventually you get like me and there's no off switch. And then it gets really, that's a whole other problem. But nonetheless, we develop the courage to try. My dad came from a rural congregation in southeastern Ohio. And in that little congregation, it was always the same guys that did things all the time. Same ones waited on the table. Same ones passed the emblem. Same ones led the song service. Same ones did everything. And so when Dad moved away from the ridge and moved up to the city, started attending a bigger congregation, he'd never done anything in the public worship service. And one of the elders there kept asking Dad, well, would you, you know, help pass the emblem? Oh, no, I can't. You know, I can't do that. And I can't word a prayer. You know, and so finally Dad said he got ashamed of telling the elder no. And he eventually began to try to do some of these things. And guess what? He learned to be a song leader. He learned to word prayers. He learned to wait on the Lord's table. He learned to give talks and eventually served as an elder in that congregation for well over 30 years. But there were a lot of things he had to overcome. Oftentimes, we're not doing a very good job of nurturing bravery in our children. And I'm not talking about foolhardy behavior. It's just having that self-confidence and that courage about yourself to say, I can do this, and you know what? If I fail the first few times, it's not going to be the end of the world. Yes, I may get up there to swing the bat, and I may strike out. But you know what? There'll be another chance to do that again, and maybe I'll do it better the next time. And you keep working to develop certain skills and abilities, helping children to understand that maybe they don't do it real well the first time, but let's keep working on it and we'll see how we can improve. I deal with a lot of kids who have never had a parent tell them, you can do this. You can be successful. You can make a difference. You can make this happen. I had a parent come in this past year raising all kinds of sand about the fact, you're giving my kid too good of grades. My kid is stupid. And you're making him out to be a straight A student. You're giving him all these A's and B's. My kid's too dumb for that. It's just because you must be helping them cheat some way. I don't know what you're doing. But my kid's a dumb kid. And I said, I'm looking at somebody dumb, but it's not the kid. And we had to kind of come to a bit of an understanding. That kid was working her heart out. But Mom wanted to paint the picture for the whole world that she had a dummy on her hands. And, of course, the bottom line was because she was wanting to get a disability check off the kid. And so if the kid appeared the least bit normal, then maybe that wouldn't happen. But because of her ulterior motives, life was one constant criticism for that little girl. And I've known a lot of parents like that. They never say, oh, wow, that's a good job. You did a great job. They walk in, this kid's been working all day to clean up its room, try to have everything ready and everything all set, and then there's one toy that's not in place. And Mom and Dad walk in, and rather than seeing the 5 tons of things that have been sorted and put away, well, look at that toy over there. What is wrong with you? Why didn't you get that thing put up? And they totally missed everything else that kid had spent the whole day doing, trying to impress. The point that we've got to make is that our kids need to nurture a self-confidence and a bravery to press on through some of those failures. There are always going to be failures. That's how you grow. But it's not the end of the world. One time Thomas Edison was ridiculed because he'd gone through 10,000 different experiments trying to find the filament that would work in the light bulb. And some of his colleagues were giving him a fit about that, saying, look, you've tried 10,000 experiments and none of them have worked. Why are you still working at this? And he smiled and says, because I found 10,000 things that won't work. But then he found the one that did. We have to be able to continue to nurture that strength, to press on through the disappointments, to press on through the challenges, to see victory. And David begins then to reap the benefits of this early in life. In 1 Samuel 16, backing up to verse 18, so as we mentioned earlier, Saul has had a problem with these moments when the evil spirit is sort of taken over. He's kind of losing it. He is angry and needs some way to calm down. And the servants come up with the fact that, as the old expression goes, music can soothe the savage beast. And so they said in verse 17, Saul said to his servants, provide me now a man that can play well and bring him to me. This is 1 Samuel 16 and verse 18. Then answered one of the servants and said, behold, I have seen a son of Jesse the Bethlehemite, that is cunning in playing and a mighty valiant man and a man of war and prudent in matters and a comely person, and the Lord is with him. Wherefore Saul sent messengers unto Jesse and said, send me David thy son, which is with the sheep. And Jesse took an ass laden with bread and a bottle of wine and a kid and sent them by David his son unto Saul. And David came to Saul and stood before him, and he loved him greatly, and he became his armor bearer. And Saul sent him to Jesse, saying, let David, I pray thee, stand before me, for he hath found favor in my sight. And it came to pass, when the evil spirit from God was upon Saul, that David took a harp and played with his hand. So Saul was refreshed and was well, and the evil spirit departed from him. David had a good reputation in a lot of different ways. We talked about him having that ability to perform in the arts, to give voice to a caring soul through the songs and the musical productions that he put together through the years. Well, here, his reputation is such that he winds up being asked to intercede or to be a helper to King Saul, to help him whenever he was having such a hard time with his anger issues. And David was looked at as being worthy. That had been a scary job. Saul was not an easy man to get along with by this time in his life. And there's going to be several times that he actually throws a javelin and tries to pin David to the wall by killing him. But David was there and continued to do what needed to be done. And so we come to the 17th chapter, and we find one of the first famous stories about David. And this is his killing of Goliath. And Dad had sent him with some provisions because David's brothers were in the army. And he had sent them with provisions to, would sent David with provisions to his brethren. And so he gets here to the battlefront, and he sees an army that is terrified because of this monumental man named Goliath. And the things that he had said against God and against the army of God were despicable things, but everybody was scared. You know, it says in verse 7 that the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him. This guy was a tank in motion. He had an armor bearer in front of him with a shield to help fend off any arrow shot his direction, had a massive spear. This guy was a mountain of a man. And he says some pretty despicable things about the nation of Israel. And everybody is really, really scared of this guy. In verse 25, the men of Israel said to David, have you seen this man that's come up? Surely to defy Israel he has come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by, saying, What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. So there's a bounty out there for anybody who'd be brave enough to take on this Goliath. But there's no takers. Even David's own brethren got a little upset at him whenever David said, what's the problem? This needs to be dealt with. In verse 28, Eliab, the eldest brother, heard when he spake unto his men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David and said, why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. You're just here to watch the fight. You're here to get up in a tree or up on a hill and watch people fight with each other. And the sheep need you. You don't belong here. You don't qualify in any way, shape, or fashion. Boy, go home. And David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? And he turned from him toward another and spake after the same manner. And the people answered him again after the former manner. They're all saying, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't understand. You know, this is man stuff, and you're just a kid. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. So David goes to Saul, makes his case, and is commissioned by King Saul to go out there and do battle with Goliath. Of course, he tries on Saul's armor, and it doesn't fit, and it doesn't work well for him. He's not used to using that. He said, just let me do what I do best. And so he took all that armor stuff off. And going to verse 40, he gets ready to go do battle with Goliath. And he took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, even in the scrip. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. Have you ever wondered? The man has talked about how brave he's bravely willing to take on Goliath. And know that God's going to bless him. He knows he's going to be victorious. God help me defeat the lion. God help me, you know, defeat the bear. God's helped me with everything else. He's going to help me with this too. Why does he pick up 5 stones? It only took one. Why did he pick up 5 smooth stones? That's exactly right. He didn't know what else might be coming. He didn't know what else might have to be dealt with. But over in the 21st chapter, in verses 18 through 22, we find record given that Goliath had some other big brothers. And David dispatches them later on during his reign as king. But he had the confidence that God was going to give him the victory, and indeed he did. We know the story well. He used the sling, he brought down Goliath and took Goliath's own sword and beheaded him. You know, sometimes we wonder, you know, why is it that it seems that Saul does not recognize who David is? I mean, earlier on, we talked about him being an armor bearer to King Saul, and you know, sometimes we make some assumptions about that. But if we go to verse 55 of the 17th chapter, it said, when Saul saw David go forth against the Philistines, he said to Abner, the captain of the host, Abner, whose son is this youth? And Abner said, as thy soul liveth, O king, I cannot tell. And the king said, inquire thou whose son the stripling is. Remember all the promises he'd made? That the father's house would be tax-free, whoever it was that killed the giant? You know, we can't be perfectly sure that Saul didn't know who was going down over that hill to fight Goliath. But he may not have been quickly refreshed over the rest of the family and who else is going to benefit if this kid happens to be successful in the battle. And as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistines, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, whose son art thou, young man? And David answered, I am the son of thy servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite. Now, there's lots of different things that can be speculated as to why Saul did not automatically know all of that. You know, it may have been that he was the one who played the harp for Saul at a much earlier age. He's now grown up some. And I can tell you of a truth, whenever I come back here numerous years in vacation Bible schools, some of y'all used to be this big, and now you're up here married with kids of your own, and I got to try to remember who you are, because you changed some over the years. And so it may be that that was one of the reasons why Saul did not readily recognize who David was. It may have been, since we know David's mentality, or Saul's mentality was a little questionable, in that he had these fits of anger that sometimes would crop up, that he just wasn't particularly thinking straight. But it does seem to be the fact that he was primarily concerned about whose family David belonged to, because this was going to be the beginning of a long-term relationship that Saul and David were going to have. Now, David is victorious. He is brave enough to go ahead and do what was right, when everybody else was too cowardly to try. But he knew that with God's help, he could be victorious. We see bravery in action. Doing what's right by being able to press on through your fears and press on through your reluctance and go ahead and accomplish what is the right thing to do. Well, this opens the door of opportunity for David. And he is pulled into military service to King Saul. In 1 Samuel 18, going down to verse 5, it said that David went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and he behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. And it came to pass as they came when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistines, that the women came out of all cities of Israel, singing and dancing, to meet King Saul with tabrets, with joy, and with instruments of music. And the women answered one another as they played and said, Saul hath slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very wroth, and the saying displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day forward. Saul has a problem with envy. If you have ever been the victim of an envious person, then maybe you understand what an insidious sin you are up against. Envy is one of those things that's listed amongst the works of the flesh in Galatians chapter 5 and about verse 21. And when an individual's vision is clouded by envy, it is next to impossible to fix it. Because when you try to do them good, you know, Paul tells us in Romans 12, you overcome evil with good. And so you try to do good to help them understand you're not this demon that they think you are. All your actions for good, they blow off. He's just trying to kiss up to me and trying to find some way to win favor. He's got some ulterior motive, everything he's doing. And all those gestures of kindness are thrown aside. All of a sudden, you can't clear yourself with someone consumed in envy. David battled that as long as Saul was alive. And sometimes he would make temporary progress. But when that envy came back into focus, there was nothing that David could do to get Saul to reevaluate things. In Proverbs chapter 3, and going down to verse 31, Solomon warns us, envy thou not the oppressor, and choose none of his ways. Now, you may look at that individual who's given you a hard time, and you say, well, if the tables were just reversed, and if I was just in his position, then he said, don't even go there. He said, you don't want to have anything to do with an envious heart. In Proverbs 14, going down to verse 30, a sound heart is the life of the flesh, but envy, the rottenness of the bone. An individual consumed in envy spends their spare time plotting as to how can I get even? How can I afflict this person that has tried to upstage me? That's what happened with Saul. What can I do to put him in his place? What can I take him down a notch or two? How can I? And they plot and they connive. And oftentimes your best efforts to help them understand, look, I'm not your enemy. We're on the same team. There have been wonderful ball teams that wound up having losing records because there were two players on the team that envied each other. And they were each trying to outdo the other one and get a few better press clippings than the other one and try to get a little bit more attention than the other one. And by virtue of the fact they wouldn't cooperate, they wouldn't help each other, they wouldn't share the ball, they had no sense of teamwork, the team lost game after game after game. And of course they blamed each other. It's all his fault. No, it's all that one's fault. But the bottom line was envy. They couldn't stand each other. In Proverbs 27, going down to verse 4, wrath is cruel, anger is outrageous, but who is able to stand before envy? It's one of those things that we have got to strive very diligently to not let it get even a toehold in our thinking. We can't give any space at all because it will consume you. Over in 1 Samuel chapter 18, going on down to verse 10, you know, David is just winning battles for Saul and making Saul look good. He's doing all the things he's supposed to do. But it came to pass on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul. He prophesied in the midst of the house, and David played with his hand at other times, and there was a javelin in Saul's hand, and Saul cast the javelin, for he said, I will smite David even to the wall with it. And David avoided out of his presence. It just kept on going. You know, David did not do anything against King Saul, but King Saul would not forgive him and could not remain on a long-term friendly basis with him. You know, all through his life, you know, there's those challenges. You know, David knew he was one day going to be king. That had already happened back in 1 Samuel 16 when Samuel came to the house and anointed him as king. And then he becomes really close friends with Jonathan. We talked about that last night. But even after some of these instances when Saul tries to kill him, he kind of gives some space and he gets away for a while. But then through Jonathan's intercessions, he's brave enough to come back home. But still, Saul would flare up again. One time he tried to trap him at the house and got mad at Michal because she assisted in David's escaping him in the 19th chapter of 1 Samuel, verses 11 through 17. Throughout his life, David tried to do what was right. He was a valiant and brave man. In 2 Samuel chapter 5, going down to the references here about what all he did, beginning about verse 17, it says, when the Philistines had heard that they had anointed David king over Israel, all the Philistines came to seek David, and David heard of it and went down to the hold. And the Philistines also came and spread themselves in the valley of Rephaim. And David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I go up to the Philistines, and wilt thou deliver them into mine hand? Once again, we talked about a tender heart. And the Lord said, David, go up, and I will doubtless deliver the Philistines into thine hand. And so David went and was victorious over the Philistines every time they came around. In verse 25, David did so, and the Lord, as the Lord had commanded him, he smote the Philistines from Geba until thou art come to Gezer. Over and over again, God gave him victory. And in 2 Samuel 22, verses 1 through 7, there's a whole song there that David sings in praise to God for how great he has been to him and how he has delivered him. But one of the interesting themes to explore in the Psalms is the number of times that David talks about knowing how many people would like to kill him. how so many enemies were lurking around him, how there were so many that would like to do him in. That theme comes up in Psalms over and over again, because as David's success increased, so did the loyal opposition. Those who were envious, those who wanted to see him off the throne, those who thought he was a usurper, that the house of Saul should still be in power. We were in our VBS back home last week. One of our lessons was on Daniel. And we saw before Daniel wound up in the lion's den, the envy of all of those other advisors to the king. They couldn't stand Daniel. They couldn't find anything against him. They just couldn't stand him. And so he wound up going to the lion's den. You know, in 2 Samuel 21, David fights in his last battle. He almost is killed. And they said, no, you can't go out with us anymore. But he was there all the way to as long as he could. So the lessons we see that we can trust in God in the little things, and God will help us through the big stuff because of our confidence and bravery in serving him. And with God's help, whatever the giants are that we have to defeat in our lives, with God's help, we can be victorious. But we've got to be brave enough to endeavor to fight the battle. We can't just cower and hide. Those problems have got to be addressed. And God will give us the courage to press on through whatever we've got to face. With God, all things are possible, Jesus said in Matthew 19:26. And Paul made the claim in Philippians 4:13, that I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. Bravery is a critical trait to nurture. To define the self-confidence and the courage to press on through what seems to be a difficult curtain, but press on through to the victory of doing what's right. And with God's help, we can do it. Thank you so much for your time tonight.